This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Back of the Nest preview show. Sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Welcome one and all to the Back of the Nest preview and once again joint match report podcast. This week, Eskif and Albert assist me in reviewing the well-earned point against Manchester United and previewing this weekend's clash against the resurgent Spurs. This show is sponsored by Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com and use BOTN at checkout for 20% off and free shipping.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yes, welcome everybody to the show. No Hambo this week, but we will be doing the match report and looking back briefly, albeit over the 0-0 against Manchester United, and then looking ahead to Spurs. And helping me do that is Sam Hesketh. Welcome.
Thank you very much. How's it going?
Good. And Albert Curley, or shall we say hungover Albert Curley?
Yes. Feeling good, though.
Feeling good.
Yeah, my ears are really warm. But that might be the headphones.
It might be. Okay, well, I think you might need this then.
Damn, I'm thirsty. I want a beer. What about you? You want a beer? I'm going to leave you 3-2 it, man.
Yes, time for beer check. I mean, guys, all I've got is a beer of Moretti. It's basically what it is. Is that I only drink free beer now. obviously not. I've just didn't get round to ordering any. So at the moment, I'm drinking the shit that we put in the fridge for people when they come round. So.
I like a Moretti.
Yeah, I like a Moretti too. It all makes sense now, last time I came round.
Oh, Jesus, that was so long ago now. So Albert, you're hungover, but... hair of the dog kind of scenario.
Hair of the dog. I mean, I didn't drink a lot of beer. I ran out of beer last night. I was on a virtual social, and the beers went quite quick. So I ended up on the gin, and then ran out of tonic, but still had gin to burn. So the only thing I could scrabble out the back of the fridge was a can of sparkling Rubicon. So I ended up having like a double gin and Rubicon, which, you know, it took me back to the sort of Tiny Rebel sort of vibes. You know, it was fruity and boozy and quite bougie.
Call it a Rubicon con. Does that work?
No, it doesn't. but it did make me think of you. I thought it's gin and mango. Like, it's got fucking Terrence written all over it.
Well, that'll be the last game of the season, then we'll start doing that. Right, Hesketh, you're drinking Asahi, I see.
I am. Good job. I'm drinking Asahi and I've got a pint of water. So I don't end up like Albert.
Yeah. it reminds me of that episode of Absolutely Fabulous when
Jennifer Saunders starts talking about water, and Patsy's like, "What's water?" And she's like, "It's a mixer, darling. You put it with whiskey." But right, we're going to start this week with the new. We've got a new investor now. This is sort of come out of the blue. There doesn't appear to be any sort of article around it. And a guy called Robert Franco has invested $5 million and is now listed as a person with interest in the club. He's listed alongside Parrish, Harris, Blitzer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donna, etc. he's been listed with Parrish, Harris, and Blitzer. Eskiv, this has come out of nowhere, and I'm not really sure what a $5 million investment in a Premier League club does.
Yeah, same. I'm not really up on stocks and shares and all that sort of thing. DR seems to be the man for that with all the GameStop vibes. But yeah, I read it this morning about this South African bloke, and the consensus from what I read seemed to be that it was sort of like an opening outlay, because mental as it seems to say, it sounds to say this, but like $5 million is nothing in football. So some people seem to think it's like the start of something. It's bound to be bigger investment. But the $5 million gets your name on the website, I suppose.
So, I mean, once upon a time, Albert, this could have got you almost 2 Valerian Ishmaels. Just slightly short.
How times have changed. Or, you know, a couple of Adiyakin buys as well.
The list could go on here. Sort of.
I mean, do we know anything else?
Go on.
Yeah, go on. Do we know anything else about him? Do we like him? Has he got some fingers in nefarious pies?
There's not much online about him. I found his name listed on one website where everyone on the board has got a picture except him.
Hang on a minute. It's not old. Who was the guy that
Jerry Lim?
Yeah. It's not Jerry Lim Mark II, is it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Wow, well remembered. I'd completely forgotten about that until you just said it. Wow. But yeah, I mean, God, £5 million just to get your name on a website seems a bit of a stretch.
I'd rather have my name on a website than spend £5 million on Jordan Much. I'll say that.
For £130, he could have got his name as a founding member of the academy. You know, like he's
could get a brick in the wall for that.
Yeah, I was going to say £100, brick in the wall.
I wonder what they're going to do with their bricks in the wall when that main stand comes down. Do you think they'll make a sort of feature of it? Do you think it's listed?
They can't preserve it.
Can't preserve it. They didn't preserve the mural. Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, there's good reasons why. Who was meant to be on it?
Well, wasn't it didn't they do the team of the century and then put them up there, didn't they? But this is also the team of the century that the fans voted to be managed by Ian Dowie.
I was going to say, Dowie's on there.
Yeah, exactly.
Somehow they've made Dowie look even more horrendous than in real life. I mean, that is
an impressive feat.
Yeah.
Just as the weather really started to affect it, Dowie just started to look better, though, weirdly. got better with weathered age. I guess we'll just have to wait and see what comes of that. But I mean, Robert Franco sounds like a gangster or something. It's a made up name. We'll have to see. Maybe it is just Jordan Much coming back to seek some revenge on us for never playing him. I know, talking about someone who never really plays but has probably been playing too much or not, who knows, we'll get into that later. Christian Benteke. Heskey, do you want to talk about his World Book Day post?
Yeah, so I apparently it's World Book Day today, and the only reason I know that is because Christian Benteke tweeted a mocked-up picture of a book, and on the front cover is him being cuddled by Gyro and Tyrone Mitchell, saying how to beat your rivals with only 2 touches in their box. And he tweeted that out saying World Book Day with some crying with laughter emojis. So weeks later, he's still giving it to Brighton, which I quite like.
Again, as always, I like the idea of Christian Benteke sitting in front of a computer mocking this up on Photoshop. Highly doubt he was here.
It's impressive that he knew it was World Book Day. I mean, I can vouch it was World Book Day today. With lots of online activities. My son's school had to dress up as a character. I don't know how familiar you are with fantastic Mr. Fox, but Arthur wanted to go as Farmer Bean. And as you know, if like I say, if you're familiar with the story, Farmer Bean shoots off Fantastic Mr. Fox's tail and wears it as like a trophy. So we had to like find like a fox's tail to wear as a prop. And my missus did some Googling and ended up, she found a great, great little miniature fox's tail. But unfortunately it was attached to, yeah, that's him. Unfortunately, the little fox's tail was attached to a butt plug.
I was wondering why you were sitting there so uncomfortably.
No. We didn't get it, obviously. it was secondhand, so we had to look elsewhere. But yeah, that's my Well Book Day story.
Secondhand.
Is that a good place to insert the Manscaped hashtag plug? I mean, it's a bit too far round, isn't it? To be honest, and the fox tail would probably end up getting in the way.
Oh, trust Albert to lower the tone. What a disgrace. I was gonna say something that would have been really inappropriate here. Brighton have removed the seagull from their crest for World Wildlife Day. Albert, everyone's getting on board with all these world days, so in solidarity of wildlife, they removed the seagull from the crest. Can you make head nor tail of that, Albert?
What? I'm a bit hungover. When you say they removed it, for how long? It's not on the crest anymore. It'll just be back there tomorrow.
For World Wildlife Day, for one day, just on their social media,
the emptiest gesture in the world. We're going to remove something from something that we'll just whack it back on the next day. If it was on a shirt, if they had a game today and they had to make new badges.
Yeah, this was literally it. It's just the seagull gone from their crest.
The blue circle.
I've got to be honest. Who wants to be represented by a seagull?
That's like, the thing. You're doing yourself a favour by taking it off.
Yeah.
It's a pest. Everyone hates it. It's a shit bird. It nicks your chips. That's about all I know it does. It's got an annoying noise.
Yeah.
So you're better off without it.
They hover in midair, not going anywhere. So do seagulls. Well, good luck to them. Well done, Brighton. 2-1, unlucky.
In your head there, Albert, the XG of that joke was very high, but it didn't deliver.
Yeah, I had a lot of possession there, but just really couldn't finish it.
Yeah, but what was kind of funny about the post is that it immediately started getting loads of abuse and people like pointing out the sort of, you know, is this really supporting wildlife by removing it completely from your badge and whatever? And they just started hiding people's replies, which just drew loads of attention to the post that, they're not helping themselves on and off the field at the moment. The expected goals champions of the world. Unfortunately, on social media post the Manchester United game last night, PVA got some racist abuse on Instagram and has tweeted this and said, you know, this is why we kneel. Weird one, Hesse, because I don't know if you saw, a lot of people ended up following it up saying, you know, this isn't the guy's not a Palace fan, and he was abusing him over a bet that he lost because PVA missed the chance, which would have been offside anyway. So doesn't really know where it's coming from there. But not the first time he's done it. His username was synonymous with other racist posts throughout the years. So a bit annoying that still social media is not doing, even though it makes not much of a difference, they can just start another account, but they're not even doing the tokens of banning accounts that are doing it now.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that Wilf was talking about a couple of weeks ago when he was talking about not taking the knee, in that it's sort of a bit of a performative thing because actually nothing is getting done by social media companies and the like. And like you say, I mean, they could start a new account and carry on doing it, but I think it's that you get these messages from the company saying, oh, yeah, we're going to crack down on it, and really nothing happens. And it's the people who get abuse that continue to suffer. And like you say, it seems like this bloke has been doing it for ages to players of teams all over the league, and it's just continued to do it and has no repercussions. So hopefully something will happen to him as a result, and crackdowns can actually start somehow.
The most ludicrous thing about the message was that he was accusing of being a shit footballer whilst complaining to him that he didn't score because he had a bet on him to score. Kind of a weird perspective on a shit footballer that you bet actual money on him to score. But there you go. Right, so let's get into talking about Manchester United. Now, Albert, you just didn't watch the game. or it was on.
It was on, but I can't say I was following it. And even if I was following it, I was up till about 1 a.m. drinking, so I probably wouldn't remember much of it anyway. Do you know what? I might have seen it. I don't know.
So the game started, an hour before the game when they announced the lineup. It looked like a 4-5-1, 4-3-3 on paper, Albert, because for all of the life money, we thought Benteke was going to start up top on his own. But Ayew played alongside him in 4-4-2. Does that sort of thing surprise you against United? That, you know, it looks more attacking against United than perhaps we were looking against Fulham.
Yeah, I mate, you're right there. It certainly on paper shows more intent in a game where we expect, you know, don't expect much out of it. But, you know, maybe that's Roy throwing caution to the wind and thinking, well, why not? We might as well have a go. It was when I saw Gyro on the bench and James McCarthy on the pitch. That's probably when the drinking really started for me. but yeah, again, you could say Roy surprised us all there in his own little way. So again, you have to kind of doff the cap to him, especially when you look at the result we got.
Yeah, I feel like Roy is starting to get a little bit of swagger about him at the moment. Like he's feeling good about the way things are going. We'll get into that a bit more. You touched on James McCarthy there. Hesketh, sorry, I thought he did all right. He had a decent game before he went off injured. He was not terrible.
Yeah, I said the same when he went off injured. I said that, you know, he's actually had an all right game, but he's just made of glass. Like it's not a surprise at all that he went off carrying a knock. There was a point where I think it was Gary Neville in commentary was like, I wish James McCarthy would pass the ball forward, which is something I think we've all been saying for the year and a half or whatever it is that he's been here. But yeah, he shielded the defence pretty well, I thought. There was only sort of one time where I could remember Man United sort of getting through the lines and having a shot when Rashford hit the ball just wide. So, I mean, it's a pretty good look for the two midfielders to, you know, stop them having any real chances to note other than that.
Yeah, and alongside him, another good performance for Luca. Albert, he's clocking up good performances here. Are we going to start seeing him back to his best?
Has he had more good performances than yellow cards? Because when he starts hitting those numbers, then we can get real. Did he get booked last night?
No, he didn't.
Oh, fair play.
Let's talk about that, Hesketh, because that when you look at the stats, the foul counts between the two sides was vast. It wasn't even remotely close. I should have wrote this down. I'm just quickly pulling it up. But Manchester United fouled us significantly more times than we fouled them in a total of, this is hard to pick up. I can't find it, but it was something like 15, 16 fouls to our 4 across the 90 minutes. Not a single booking for United, even though Bruno Fernandes made somewhere around, you know, 40% of the fouls that Manchester United committed. No yellow.
Yeah. Again, I said this when we were watching it, you know, with Fernandes, I thought Fred as well had a couple of fouls, was mouthing off all the time. I mean, like, surely just cumulatively, these guys should be getting yellow card, even if it's not for like a foul in particular. But yeah, it was noticeable that they were fouling us quite a bit. But I think the only booking was Gyro, wasn't it, near the end, which was pretty laughable. Man United of old. Solskjaer wasn't moaning about that like he was against him a couple of months ago.
What was interesting about it, and I actually credit to Man United here, because it was kind of smart what they did. They stopped our counter attacks very early. So all of their fouls, all of these cynical fouls that were happening were deep in our own half. So it was sort of before we could break out and actually start to look dangerous. And the only time that I thought it actually, you know, really, really did look like that should have been a booking out on his own was two fouls, which was Bruno Fernandes, his very first one after Joel Ward went straight through Luke Shaw with like a proper old school challenge, completely fair, but, you know, took him out. And then immediately after that, and kind of begrudgingly respect Bruno Fernandes for it, the next phase of play went straight through Joel Ward as a, you go through my teammate, I'll go through your teammate kind of scenario. So there was that one. And there was another one when ball was played into Benteke, and I think it was Fred this time. Benteke was trying to turn it around the corner to Eze. But all the rest of them were all just very smart, niggly fouls deep in our own half. And it really slowed us down and didn't allow us to turn them around. So, it looked like it must have been something that they planned to do in the build up to the game. But good start from us. Couple of crosses into the box, which Benteke got on the end of. Skied a volley. Yeah, Heskey, it was the most positive start we've had in any game recently. I mean, to actually getting shots off in the first 10 minutes. So I didn't quite know what I was watching.
Yeah, I was sort of expecting it to be the like, well, we've had our good 5 minute spell early on, and now we're just going to camp in our, you know, the edge of our box for the rest of the game. But yeah, like you said a bit earlier, it was sort of the performance, more of a performance you'd think we'd have against Fulham, where you just go at them. You know, be positive, get balls into the box, let Benteke have a sort of few sights on goal. It was just weird that it was against Man U, whose away record is really good and who are in pretty good form. But it was, yeah, it was positive and it was promising. And I don't want to be too negative. It is a sort of thing like you wish that we'd have done it in the games against like a Burnley or a Fulham. Because we know that we're sort of capable of it. Second half was a bit different because I couldn't see the fog. So there were times where the ball sort of went to Andros in our half and then either appeared on the other side or came back with the Man United player on the end of it. So a bit harder to tell on that. But yeah, it was a good start at the beginning and of the first half. And it's just a shame we weren't able to capitalise early on because I think we could have... Sounds funny to say this afterwards, but I think we could have picked them off for a few more if we'd have got an early one.
Yeah, they were. Also, it could have woken them up and slapped them into life. So you don't know which way around it's going to be. But yeah, they were really rocky at the start. Gave the ball away a lot in very dangerous areas for us, but didn't take advantage. And then May United had what turned out to be really their only bit of sustained pressure for the game for about 10 minutes, and. Ultimately led with a shot for Rashford that he dragged wide that he probably should have done better on. But then Nemanja Matic, Albert, he scored that goal from range against us to turn around the 2-0 to win 3-2 a couple of years back.
Still not over that.
let fly from range again. But this time, I'm sure you've seen the steals of Guaita tipping it over the bar out of the top corner. Fantastic save from Vinny. Surprised that he's keeping us in game still?
No. Absolutely not. No, he's just brilliant. He's phenomenal. And, you know, saves like that, you know, it's a point against United is a good result. You know, because I can't say I saw the performance. We might have clearly deserved to win it. I don't know. But again, as you said to me yesterday, before kickoff, would you take a 0-0? I'd obviously bitten your hand off. And, you know, if you're going to get a 0-0, you need your goalkeeper to be doing, you know, pulling off saves like that. And he does it in more games than he doesn't do it. So it's so nice after having a real choppy sort of goalkeeping scenario for a few years to sort of not have to worry about that at all is constantly reassuring.
Yeah, it was. It turned out to be their only shot on target, United, as well. So we actually outshot them on target. We had two and they had one. So I think... Sky and BT Sport are going to start passing on our games soon enough. It's just going to be it's going to be on Channel 5 or something. It's the only ones who are going to take our games in the
Quest
in the future.
We're going to go on Quest with the Carling Cup.
but in my notes here, I've just gone, Man United just fell apart after that. It was funny, but they was talking about Gary Neville on commentary was saying, you know, Ollie's got to get into get into them at half time and have them come out fired up for the second half and get going. It just did not happen. And then this is when Roybal can function at his best, and perhaps that's we're seeing a resurgence of Roybal at the moment, because as it's stay in games and nick them 1-0. If you think back before the first lockdown, we won those 3 1-0s on the bounce, and that's basically what he's trying to do. And now, you know, we've kept as many clean sheets in 2021 as we did in 2020 now. So, which is a crazy stat. We've kept 5 now. We kept 5 in the entirety of last year. So, you know, we're getting our Roybal swagger back in that sense. So why Sam Roy's got a bit of swagger back, you know, keep, and we can win those games. We can win those tight games because we do have the forwards that can turn on moments of quality at times. And Roy said it after the game. I think a lot of us were thinking the same thing, that we just lacked a bit of composure in front of goal, and not just necessarily strikers, the final balls as well. If you think Benteke, it looks like he snapped at a chance, Hesketh, when Ayew done well down the right and cut it back to him, but probably a bit harsh on Benteke on second viewing.
Yeah, I think. And it's been the case with quite a few of our passes this season, where we just seem to sort of smash the ball at each other. Benteke probably should have done a bit better. And it never looks good when you swing and it hits your standing leg and goes backwards. It's not the best look for your technique.
That's what I was expecting him to do when the cross came in against Brighton.
Yeah.
Which, you know, weirdly, I didn't. No, they say in sports, like the world-class sportsmen visualize something before it happens. So when they see a cross coming over, like they see the connection, they see the route that it needs to take, and it all just sort of happens. And weirdly, when that cross came over to Benteke in that Brighton game, I saw him volleying it perfectly into the bottom corner before it happened.
Are you calling yourself a world-class sportsman?
I'm calling myself a world-class watcher of sports.
It was more about the trajectory of the ball rather than my faith in Christian Benteke, although that probably did play a little bit of a factor.
Gus Poyet talked about it in comms. They was like, Jamie Carragher, in the analysis after, said, I can't see where the ball is at the moment. And Poyet said, because it's off the screen, because that's how ridiculously high the cross went.
As I say, I don't think it's a great look on Benteke, because you would sort of say at least, you know, get contact with it. But the build up play to get there was good. Ayew did well to get the ball sort of parallel with the box and get it in. I just think he needed to sort of pass the ball rather than sort of smash it as hard as he did, and never know what would have happened afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, it was still a tough chance anyway. Even if he'd gone on target, it would have been difficult to score. And then there was also Andros Townsend with a volley that left Henderson stranded and just missed the far upright in front of the Holmesdale. I thought it was in when he left his foot. When the goalie stopped moving, I was like, oh, I see it. But
you visualised that one, did you?
Yeah, something like that. I didn't visualize that one because it's Townsend, isn't it? I was visualizing it in the upper tier of the Holmesdale, if I'm honest. But and then late on, they didn't really show it back that much, did they? They didn't draw any lines on the pitch to show if Patrick Van Aanholt was offside, but it looked offside, didn't it? At least it did to me.
Yeah, it was a brilliant pass. I think it was Luke who put the pass.
It was a lovely pass, yeah.
And it's one of those where we've talked about how we much prefer obviously being at the ground to being on telly. It was one of those where, because of the angle of the camera, you couldn't see the run. You sort of see Luke pass it and you don't know it's a brilliant pass until it becomes a brilliant pass. To be honest, I was surprised he didn't score it, whether he would have been offside or not. And I think he probably would have been, because PVA, funnily enough, is one of the few players when one-on-one I'm like, I back our play at a score. But the keeper did come out pretty well and saved it with his feet. So yeah. Credit him for that. But
I would say it felt very similar to the one he scored against Man United before in front of that end. And also against Hull in that 4-0 all those years back, he scored a similar one to that. So I was surprised. But I mean, Dean Henderson is a very good goalkeeper. It's going to be interesting to see if... De Gea can get his place back, because he's apparently going to be out for several weeks for whatever reasons that is. So, man of the match then. Obviously, Albert doesn't know. Man of the match was whoever was hosting the Zoom meeting that he was having a party on, I guess. So
the gin and the Rubicon was the man of the match for me.
It was Mr. Gordon's.
It was a kind of an overwhelming consensus, really, I think, Hesketh, who man of the match was.
Yeah, I think Joel Ward seemed to be the player that most people gave it to, which I have no issue with at all. I think Kiartya played well as well. So I think if either of those two were given it, I think Cech got it on the telly.
Yeah, Cech got the official award. Yeah,
I think either of those two getting it is absolutely fine. You know, Cech did a good job of sort of being as solid as he has been, but also coming out a few times and hassling higher up the pitch, which was good. Wardy, you know, if he's keeping players like Rashford quiet, and I think Shaw was the player that got the ball, you know, a lot for them to get attacks going, and he kept him fairly quiet as well. So, I think Wardy was a very good performer yesterday too.
Okay, so off the back of that, and now you can have a little time to think, Hesketh. It's going straight to Albert first. We've got three right backs on the books. We've got Nathan Ferguson, who's obviously one for the future, and he's back on the training field in light training, and hopefully he won't break down again this time. And then we've got Joel Ward and Nathaniel Clyne out of contract. Assuming Ferguson gets fit and is going to be the guy, who gets the contract out of the other two? Do you give it to Clyne or Ward?
I can't claim to. Obviously, I've not seen Nathan Ferguson play, but obviously he's in contract, so he ain't going anywhere. Who do I give the contract at? Well, I guess. That's such a hard question. I think you have to go Joel Ward, don't you? Just out of loyalty.
Also, it will be
versatility.
Upon signing it, it would be testimonial year immediately. So.
I don't like to answer that question because I love Kleine. I think he's come back and he's done really well. I think Joel Ward probably earned it, you know.
Okay, and Hesketh, what's your thoughts?
It's very similar to Albert. I think it's a really tough question.
And Sophie's choice.
Yeah, Kleine, like on here, I was pretty sceptical when we signed him initially, because I just thought it's all right in the sense that he's never going to play. But then he played.
And also, if you think about it, we were all thinking what Zaha did to him in that Bournemouth game.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the first couple of games he was in the team, he was a bit ropey, but then just got way better. And, you know, like we've debated about who's better going forward and who's better at the back and that sort of thing. Oh, it's tough. I'd probably inch towards giving it to Wardy, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm echoing both of you. It's such a difficult choice. I don't know. I'm not going to pick because I love Nathaniel Clyne so much. Like, loved him back in the day when he first broke through for us. He was such a shining light in dark times. It was glorious to have him and just seeing him develop and then, you know, get a decent move and then go on to make a big move, start getting into England and all of that. And he's come back and he's done well, and it would be nice for him to finish his career with us. But Joel Ward has put in 9 years worth of, you know, we signed him as a championship right back, and somehow he's managed to pretty much exclusively, barring an 18-month gap, hold down the first team spot and even playing defensive midfield a few times as well. Was it at the Etihad they put him in defensive midfield once? It was absolutely, yeah. We only lost that game 1-0 as well, I think. Considering you're going into your testimonial year, you probably shouldn't be making judgments on things like that. But to rob him of a testimonial now would suck. And also, you know, a packed out Selhurst, again, it would be against Portsmouth, let's face it. And Portsmouth have great travelling support. Could be a good day out once we're all out of lockdown. Sun shining over Selhurst.
That bell fucking ringing.
Yeah. smoke rising from Tasty Jerk.
Oh, yeah, I'm there.
I'm there.
Albert sitting on the wall outside, eating his tasty jerk whilst drinking a Rubicon.
Yeah, forget the match.
But yeah, no, brilliant. And yeah, let's say we'll just sum it up. Great point. I think to go take 4 points from Manchester United this season is fantastic. Only the second time in our history we've done that. 89-90 was the last time, and only other time we took 4 points from them in a season. Would have been nice to do the double. I also saw a stat before that if Zaha could have played and scored, he would have been the only ex-Manchester United player ever to score against them home and away in the same season. But I did reply to that tweet saying, to be fair, he's got as much chance scoring injured from the stands as the starting 11 have of scoring a goal during the game. And it turned out I was right. Visualise that one, lads.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Funtime videos, choose your match day squad, post match ratings, and much more. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Anyway, right, let's move into Spurs now. Doesn't get much easier this weekend. Five straight wins in all competitions after they went through quite a blip. You think all the way back to when we drew 1-1 at Selhurst, where 2,000 of us were allowed in. And do you remember the Højbjerg interview where he was saying that it's everyone's cup final because Spurs are top of the league? Hasn't gone quite so well for them. But yeah, absolutely. I've started to turn it on a bit, haven't they, Heskiff? I mean, a win against Fulham tonight, albeit a bit of a controversial one. Five wins in a row, three straight clean sheets. Going to be another tough weekend for us.
Yeah, it is. And I read a stat that with Man United at home and Tottenham away are statistically our worst games since we've come up. We've had a point before yesterday. We had a point at home to Man United since we've come up. We've only got 1 point away to Spurs, which if I remember was the 0-0 where Yala did that rascal bit of skill.
Yeah.
Which is what I remember from that game. And Lloris doing his usual, like, best goalkeeper in the history of football against us. So it's not a game that I would normally look forward to. I mean, memories of the 4-0 at their new ground sort of loom pretty large. And it's not great to hear that they're getting a bit better defensively when they're coming up against us. Hopefully, you know, listen, we might even get two or three shots on goal. I'll take that as a win, I think, if we manage to get three shots on target on Sunday.
So going through their strengths are unsurprisingly finishing scoring chances, counter-attacks and creating chances through individual skill, which pretty much sums up their front three, really. And adding Bow into that recently has sort of rediscovered his form just in time to play us, which is ideal. But Albert, protecting the lead's one of their weaknesses, so can't let our heads get down if we concede the first goal, particularly considering the 1-1 draw at Selhurst.
Yeah, I mean, apart from the recent little purple patch they've been on, certainly defensively, you know, they do ship goals. That's always been a problem for them. Even when like Mourinho first came in, you know, he sort of picked up their performances, but they were still like, you know, they'd be 3-0 up at half time, but still then seeing a game out 3-2. So there's definitely a bit of softness at the back there that a potent strike force could take advantage of, but therein lies the problem for us.
Yeah, well, exactly. So let's touch on that now. I saw a great tweet from, I think it was Crystal Palace DC, saying when's Mateta's suspension over for scoring? And I said it would be funny if it wasn't true. Albert, he's got to be baffled, right? He scores and he's only start, and now he's been left out for two games, can't even get 10 minutes at the end.
Yeah, and putting on the neutral sort of Roy defensive tin hat, we don't know what goes on in training. Maybe he's got a little niggle and they're trying to protect him. But, you know, that doesn't seem to be the case. And it's baffling, really. Listen, you know, Benteke scored an absolute peach of a goal, but so did Mateta. And you sort of think that at least, okay, you can argue the toss over who should start. But again, you'd think he'd get 10 minutes at the end if we were, you know, still looking to nick a goal just to change it up. And again, we've seen what he's capable of. Hopefully he gets a chance.
What does it tell you about what Hodgson thinks about him? Do you think it's a case of he just doesn't trust him yet enough to do all of the bits defensively and off the ball and defending from the front that Benteke does?
Yeah, well, he came out and said it, didn't he? Essentially, you know, before the United game, that, you know, he feels that Benteke offers us more defensively and Mateta's not there. And, you know, I get it, you know, Benteke's qualities and in our own area are important, but, you know, we should be, the fact that we're having to rely on that on you know, to argue the toss about who starts up front, again, is a bit of a damning indictment to the sort of general state of our, you know, our approach and how we want to set our stall out defending things like set pieces. When you're literally choosing your striker over who's going to protect your goal more, I mean, I'm not going to say it's anti-football, but it's just a bit baffling. And surely Mateta's earned the right to at least get half an hour or a start, you know. It's baffling.
Now, Hesketh, we've had we've got more points in the last three games than we've had shots on target. 5 points to 4 shots on target. And I think I'm loving what how Albert's put it there in terms of saying the fact that we're talking about how we defend through what strike we're playing is a damn indictment indeed. But there has been an element, and Cahill has talked about in interviews, that we need to get back to basics in defending. And, you know, he talks about it after the Brighton game, putting bodies on the line. And now we've kept 2 clean sheets on the bounce. We've kept 5 this calendar year. So we're starting to pick those up and get back into that basics. So is it a case of you hope he's just resetting the foundation, keep the clean sheets, and then he'll start to try and build on that over the next coming games, especially once we get past Spurs and into a couple of more winnable games, I guess. I say that, I only know the fixture after West Brom because I actually looked it up this week, but could be Man City the week after that, for all I know. But,
I mean, you would hope that it is. Obviously, we do need to be better defensively, and our thing last year, and I mean, under Roy altogether, really, is that we were hard to beat, didn't let in many goals, and sort of nicked a goal ourselves. But the thing is, you know, against Fulham, I mean, the Fulham performance was awful. May night performance was better. But, you know, the last 15, 20 minutes, you would just think, look, really, what have you got to lose? You know, all right, if Man United go up the other end and score, that's a point. Arguably, we're safe anyway. And it's Man United who are really good as an away team. So you just think, if you just put Mateta on, he's different to Benteke. So it gives them something else to think about. You know, would Harry Maguire, who I think is vastly overrated anyway, would he be able to deal with someone quick and rangy? You know, especially if he's been playing, you know, 70, 75 minutes. It's worth chucking him on, you know. I think if you're happy to put Schlappi on, and we know that Roy loves Jeff, and Jeff knows how Roy wants to play, so I get it. But if you're happy to put him on and he's been out for like 2 months, surely you would want to put on a fit Mateta, who is double nutmegged, you know, for his first goal. So, yeah, going back to basics is fine. And there's a lot I like about us keeping clean sheets, obviously, but I like even better when we keep a clean sheet and score. So I would like yesterday, And I don't even think it's in hindsight, because I think people probably said it at the time. I don't think anyone would have been unhappy if Mateta had come on, even if at the end, right, they nick a goal at the end. At least we've sort of gone for it a little bit. And I think you can have a solid defence whilst at the same time not relying on your centre forward to be your best defender.
Yeah, but what's also bizarre about just reading in game is that it never looked, they didn't look like they were threatening. It wasn't like they were hammering and getting corner after corner against us or anything like that. You know, these all like, they just weren't putting us under that sort of pressure. They were making mistakes. They just didn't really seem on it. So it just seemed like you make those decisions in game. And I think the decision in game should have been to switch Benteke off and get Mateta some time, just because his mental state, he must be sitting, I just can't believe what he must be thinking sitting on that bench. I mean, I've given up speculating on what Batshuayi is thinking on that bench, because I mean, goodness gracious me.
even to just preserve Benteke a bit, you know, I like Benteke. I'm not upset when I see him starting on the team sheet. You know, and he's getting a run of games in the team. So, but you sort of think, all right, regardless of who we're talking about bringing on, you know, just to give Benteke a break, because he isn't the same in terms of sharpness. And, you know, it feels like 10 years ago now when he scored those 15 goals. You know, he's not the same player since those injuries in terms of his sharpness. You sort of think, you know, that's only more fuel for the fire to, you know, I'll let, you know, bring him off with 20 minutes to go, let him recoup, because he's probably going to start against Spurs at the weekend.
I don't know. Maybe just Hodgson just sees him as John Felipe Sorlot or something. Maybe that's the problem in training. He's just having a mare.
But you know what? That's the thing, though. I've heard interviews like Andros, I think, after the Brighton game, was like, they asked him about Mateta's goal, and he was like, yeah, we've seen what he's like in training. Like, he scores goals from everywhere. He's got unbelievable skill, great finisher, scores from outside the box, close range. And it's like, well, I mean, so he is doing it in training then. So he should also like be picked on the basis of training. But I guess Ryan knows best.
Yeah, well, what is it? 11 games left. So as I say, the next one after is West Brom. So looking ahead, you got to think we only need two or maybe as little as one more point really to stay up this season now. I mean, but we do have a sort of set, I'd call a semi-difficult run in. So we go West Brom, Everton away, Chelsea at home, Southampton away, Leicester away, Man City, Sheffield United, Villa, Arsenal, Liverpool. So still some tough games in there. Me and Hesketh before recording was joking about how when do we play Liverpool, because they can't win for love nor money at the moment. But of course, it's the furthest point possible away. So they will undoubtedly have rediscovered some sort of form by then. But yeah, so it's what, we 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, so 11 games left of Roy. Albert, do you see
for this season
any way of, yeah, do you see him getting a new contract? Clinton Morrison very much so said on Sky that he can't see it happening. He thinks Roy stays at the end of the season and then goes to another club, takes another job. I mean, if Eddie Howe has been apparently tapped up for the Celtic job now, so if that was the plan, that's gone out the window. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it was only until I watched the Clinton Morrison clip on Twitter today of him explaining the scenario, and it's only when he sort of spells it out, it feels more obvious and it feels more abundantly clear that it is heading towards, you know, Roy just, you know, saying farewell at the end of the season. You know, with all the other players that are out of contract, it feels too. I know we like to question the motives of the club and whatever, and you know, and who knows what this new board member has plans for, but it feels too lax and too unorganized for us to, you know, be with this, oh, there's 11 players out of contract and the manager's out of contract and that kind of not be like intentional. I get you. Listen, I think Clinton said it, he expects three or four of those on that list to re-sign. I'd almost go a couple more and think I wouldn't be surprised if half of them stay. But it does feel like that we're gearing towards some sort of sea change in terms of freshening up the squad. And, you know, is it a stretch too far to chuck a fresh manager into that mix as well? Or, you know, it seems more sensible for me that, you know, you do it with someone that's going to come in with a new vision, a new direction, and maybe has got players in mind of who he wants and who he wants to sign. I can't see Roy getting another deal. Whether he'd sign it or not is a completely other topic. Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to. We've talked about wanting to bring the average age of the squad down, and you've got 11 players out of contract, and you know Roy is going to want to bring in experienced Premier League players. And it's just not the direction of the club anymore. So it just seems, just more and more as we get towards it, it seems like a natural part in a ways at the end of the season. Hopefully we can just continue to point with some decent performances between now and then, and we can all have fond memories of Roy and just see this as a little, you know, this last year is a bit of a blip in what was otherwise a wholly successful period as manager. And coming did what he did at the start. Could end up giving us our record points total in a season still, and already has that record anyway to himself. And hopefully we can all look back on with a smile on our face as opposed to a miserable one. But we'll end it with Hesketh. How were your Manscaped balls when Clinton Morrison said "my club" in referring to Crystal Palace?
They were warm,
warm and fuzzy,
warm and fuzzy. Discount code BOTN.
Indeed. Right. Predictions. Start with you, Albert.
Ooh. 2-1 to the Spurs.
And Hesketh.
I'm going to go 2-0 to Spurs, but we'll have 3 shots on target.
Oh, bold. I watched Spurs against Burnley the other day at home, and they seem to have taken on a different sort of philosophy at home, and they come out all guns blazing against Burnley and really put them to the sword early. And I hope they don't do that to us. But I can see that that's going to be their approach between now and the end of the season, because they haven't got much to lose. So it'll be getting through the first 20 minutes if we want to get anything out of the game, and then hopefully we can either pinch a draw or win. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be 3 or 4-0 Spurs, unfortunately, which is not very often our predicts us to get spanked. But there you go. I think it's going to be a little bit too much for us, but hopefully not. Right. Believe it or not, lads, there's no midweek games next week. So we just have a regular preview pod of talking about the West Brom game next week. So, thanks for the last few weeks of talking about all the matches that we have played. Bit of a different vibe for us.
Albert didn't even have to watch them. It's quality.
What a fine selection of results we had to pick the bones out of, you know?
Oh, dear.
What?
Do we have to keep doing it?
Well, listen. I certainly don't like looking back at bad results against, you know, Leeds. I don't think I even did that one, to be honest. But, it's nice. I have just predicted a loss, but it's nice to sit here and go, you know, dream of what could be and the amazing performance that we might put in, rather than have to sit and reflect on the shite performances that we have put in. You know, so.
True.
I'm much more comfortable in the preview zone.
Yeah, exactly. Look, the match report will likely be out late Monday night. Definitely ready for your inboxes on Tuesday morning, because I think the game kicks off at 7:15 on Sunday, doesn't it? It's a late one.
What?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so that will be happening then. Hambo and the team, listen out for that one. And then we'll be back probably in your inboxes for Thursday next week, talking about Big Fat Sam. Up against big old Sam Allardyce. He wasn't there, was? Didn't we beat Bilic 5-1? He wasn't there when last time round. Okay.
Yeah. He wasn't.
So their results are getting tighter and tighter. They've lost. They lose 1-0 tonight or last night.
They did, yeah.
So they're getting a bit tougher to break down, as you expect, but it's all going to be a bit too late for Allardyce, isn't it? I think that they're in big trouble. They're certainly going to need to beat us if they want any chance. And I mean,
do you think he'll mysteriously vanish before they get relegated?
and claim that it's nothing to do with him.
Yeah,
I think there might be a chance. I don't think he'll do that this time. I think his excuse will just be it was a complete lost cause. I mean, it was more than I could survive. I don't think he needs to. I think if he can't help them survive, no one's going to see that as a reflection on him. It's a reflection on the underinvestment in that squad. And, you know, it seems like some teams, like Norwich have done it, that they seem to take a promotion and accept the relegation just to get the cash flow into the club. And, you know, if they can survive with the players they've got, then great. If not, go down financially stronger and come back at another crack at it the following season. And that seems to be working out for Norwich at the moment. But as what I was getting at is that you can see a natural, could it be Roy Hodgson going back to the Baggies next season as his contract's out? And there are rumours that they approached us for Hodgson when they put Allardyce in. So who knows? That's could be where it all ends up at the end of the season. But we'll be back next Thursday, as I say. Until then, up the Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.